Hi there, welcome. It's Take Two with Jerry and Debbie on EWTN Radio. And as always, it's your show. We're going to present a topic we did a couple of episodes on a few weeks ago. And really by demand, the interest is there and the need is there. So we're going to talk about that again. I am Jerry Usher, along with Debbie Giorgiani and you. And you're only seeing Debbie on video today on
YouTube, everyone.
And Facebook. Hi, Deb. No, I didn't have a bad hair night. I never have a bad hair night because there just isn't enough of it there. You know, it's every night's the same hair night for me. But
do you know why I'm the only one on Skype today? Do you know why? Because I just got back from the dentist.
Oh,
and I'm super happy.
You wanted to be the only one on screen for the whole show today. I like
that. Right. Good checkup. It was great. I love my dentist. We should do a show on that if you like your dentist. I love my dentist. Right? Do you get nervous going to the dentist? Some people really do.
I don't get nervous, but when I lived in San Diego, I really loved my dentist because he was a huge fan of Catholic Answers when I worked there. Oh. And he did us a lot of favors dentally, if I can put it that way. So
gotcha.
he was a good guy, still is a good guy. But anyway, here we are.
It's really great. Okay, so we are revisiting this topic again because it's very, very important, the opioid crisis. And we want you to weigh in on it, either your experience, your knowledge of it, your understanding of it, what you think we can do better in our own families and in our own communities, our parish communities, things that we can do right around our sphere of influence. Let's talk about that. And Jerry, I know you're going to share something. You shared it before we came on the air about this very interesting martyr that had a had an addiction to opioids, and you're going to share that in a moment. But let me just give the number, because last couple times we've tackled this topic, we've had full phone lines, so we really need you to weigh in quickly on this. 1-833-288-3986. That's 833-288-EWTN.
Okay, again, yeah, if you have been personally impacted by the opioid crisis or really any sort of addiction, drug addiction crisis, so often this is the kind of a byproduct of a very innocent prescription that is given to someone who finds himself or herself in pain. And sadly, before you know it, sometimes there's an addiction that develops. So we really want to have this conversation again so that we can all become better enlightened about this and hopefully more hopeful at the end of the show. Hopefully hopeful. There we go. 833-288-3986. And you're right, Debbie, on that note of hope. Some of you who are listening, maybe you're aware of this saint, but I just wanted to point him out. His name, I'm going to probably not get it right. He was Chinese. It's Saint Mark Ji Tianjiang, and that's Tianxiang. I'll put a link to a story about him on our webpage. But he was alive in the late 19th, early 20th century in China, and then they had the Boxer Rebellion, and Saint Mark Ji was a respected man. He was a leader in the Christian community. He was a doctor. And he got a real bad stomach ailment, and so he started to take opiates, and because of that, he got addicted to it. And back then, of course, it wasn't understood as an addiction or anything, and so he would go to confession, and he would confess it all the time. And because it wasn't understood, and it wasn't understood as an addiction, the priest thought he did not have a firm purpose of amendment to stop doing that. So St. Mark abstained from the Eucharist for the last 30 years of his life, even though I understand he went to daily Mass but did not receive the Eucharist. Well, during the Boxer Rebellion, so many Chinese were wiped out, and he and his family were executed. They were martyred, and he chose to be, I believe, beheaded was the way he was killed. But he chose to go last, so that nobody in his family would die alone. And so you talk about the holiness of this man, even Debbie, struggling with a horrible addiction. So that gives all of us, I think, hope, because no matter what we're battling, we can stay close to God and stay close to the sacraments.
Oh, absolutely. How did you find out? And so how did you find out about this? He's actually a canonized saint?
He is. His feast day is July 9th. It's coming up in just about 3.5 weeks.
How did you know about this? Did you just research it? Because I've never heard of this saint.
No, actually, somebody can't remember who exactly, somebody mentioned him to me, and I thought, wow, that's fascinating. So I looked him up online, and Alatea and so many others. I wouldn't be surprised if National Catholic Register has done a report on him. So
Sure.
But a beautiful, beautiful story.
So his first name is Mark, St. Mark?
St. Mark, yeah.
St. Mark, okay, beautiful. Well, thank you for sharing that. And you are going to post it on take2show.com, correct?
Yep. I
okay,
will.
Good.
Absolutely.
Because you know we're going to get a lot of emails about that.
Right, right.
So, okay, this is going to be a really good discussion, folks, and we really count on you to make it that way. So if you could call in, there are a couple open phone lines. You'll speak to Ryan, and he'll put you on hold. You get to listen live, and you can just enter into the conversation in just a really easy way. And it's a very productive conversation, but we need your help. We can't do this alone. So here's the number, 1-833-288-3986. We're talking about the opioid epidemic and how we can better understand it and what we can do beginning today in our own families, in our own neighborhoods, what we can do right now. So let's talk about that. Fill up the phone lines and that'll help us out greatly to make this a very good, I think it's going to be, we're going to have a good outcome, Jerry. I think we're going to walk away with a better understanding.
Well, yeah, and as I mentioned before, we did two episodes on this because every now and then, as you folks know, listen, we have such a response to a certain topic, we'll bump the next day's topic out and do a part two, and we did a part two on this one, and that's why more after shows are coming up very, very soon, so we can continue the conversation really right as it's happening and it's still fresh in our minds. But this has been an amazingly important topic everywhere we go. This is a problem that affects, Debbie, people of all ages. It affects people. Mm-hmm. Of all classes, all walks of life. So we want to hear if you yourself personally have a struggle with this, or maybe a family member, and how has your understanding of that individual, maybe you know and love someone who has an opioid addiction, how has your love for them grown, and your understanding of them as a person, as perhaps not being, you know, entirely, if at all, responsible for this? It's very, very important that we mm-hmm. touch about all these things. So yeah, phone lines are filling up.
Well, and let's make it abundantly clear that we understand that when somebody gets addicted to opioids, or has an opioid addiction, I should say, it starts out very innocently. You know, and maybe out of a necessity for pain. And we understand that. But then it gets to the next level. And then it gets beyond where there's the control aspect, there's no control of it. And then it turns into a full-fledged addiction. At that point, we have a serious problem. But there's things that can be done, and resources and help that is right around the corner. So let's talk about that and see at the end of this conversation if we come out a little bit changed. 833-288-3986. First up is Sue in just a minute. So stay with us on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie.
Our thanks to the show team who do a great job. Ryan Penny on the phones, Jeff Burson social media, and Rich Jesse on the controls today. Take Two with Jerry and Debbie. And thank you, affiliates, for airing the program as well. And one of the other programs that you may have heard about, probably have really come to enjoy it, it's EWTN Live with Father Mitch Pacwa tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on most of these same affiliates of EWTN. And Father Mitch's guest tonight, Debbie, is Chris Padgett, who's going to talk about how we as Catholics really can and should keep the Eucharist at the heart of our daily routine. So it's Father Mitch Pacwa on EWTN Live tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern Time.
Okay, let's go right to the phones. We do have full phone lines, so when a line becomes available, please jump on that, and Ryan will pick up real quickly. And we want you in on this discussion at 1-833-288-3986. We are revisiting, I think it's for the third time, Jerry, is that correct? The opioid epidemic?
It is the third episode, yeah.
Third episode, wow. Okay, as promised, Sue in Gastonia, North Carolina, on Carolina Catholic Radio, first-time caller. Hi, Sue, and welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for taking my call. First off, I'd like to know what an opiate is, because I'm on painkillers due to a car accident about 3 years ago. And I don't want to go to my doctor to tell her that I feel like I may have an addiction to it because I'm scared she'll take me off of them, and then I'll have all this pain in my back. And I do notice at times if the pain does not exist and it's not there, and stress in life has come, that I kind of do go to the prescription bottle. Not all the time, but at times I'm noticing this. And I'm starting to wonder, am I addicted to these pain pills? And what is an opiate? And is it a certain, do you have names of the drugs that falls underneath that?
Right.
And where do you go for help on things like this?
Well, Sue, thanks for the call, first of all. And it sounds like you're a real, a prudent person and a real fighter, and you're really trying to avoid, being sucked down too deeply with this issue. So congratulations on that. I just did a quick little internet search, and opiates are drugs that are derived from the flowering opium poppy plant. And they include heroin, morphine, codeine, and probably others. And they are, as you said, very addictive, and you're trying to avoid that. Now, where you would go, I mean, Debbie there, Sue, we can't really, we don't know exactly, where to send you in your area, for help. I would say talk to your doctor about that, Debbie. Wouldn't you think? Talk to your medical, professional, your care provider, and let them know of your concern, because they're probably the one who's prescribed this for you. And I would imagine if you're like me, if my primary care provider wants to prescribe something for me that I know has a potential for addiction, I really want to talk this through with them and say, hey, I want to be in touch with you along the way, and let's see how I'm making use of this, and I want your advice and your input. So what do you think, Debbie, about Sue finding some helpful resources?
Yeah, and again, Sue, we are not medical professionals. We're not trained therapists or counselors in this area. We are just tackling this discussion just like you. But a couple things I just wanted to say. Oxycodone, stuff like that, they're opioids. They're highly addictive, like Jerry shared with heroin and morphine and codeine for the opiates. All of these painkillers, as my understanding, Jerry, they are highly addictive. And I understand, Sue. I get it, because I actually had I had nerve damage in my foot, and my foot doctor prescribed painkillers that, when I went and researched it, they were highly addictive. And so if I had gotten addicted to it because I didn't want the pain in my foot, I get it. I would have felt the same way. If going back to my doctor, I would have said, I don't want to I don't want this on my record that I'm addicted to it. So I get it. I'm just saying this is what I would have done if it were me, and I felt that I was starting to get kind of hooked on these painkillers to help me with the pain. There's a lot of, pain management centers, rehab centers, a lot of chiropractors are into pain management. I mean, there's a lot of places you can just call and say, can you give me some information or resources to know when it becomes an addiction? And then I would definitely, talk to your doctor if you obviously it sounds like you trust your doctor, but there's so many places out there right now. Jerry, you and I talk about, I mean, you have so many, in California. I have a ton in Arizona. I could just imagine in North Carolina, you have them as well, Sue. So I would start going through and going online and maybe Googling it in and calling some places just to get the information you need, Sue, to feel comfortable having that discussion with your doctor. Does that help at all? I understand where your come from is.
Yeah, because it is from the car accident. It's going to be chronic pain for the rest of my life. So, when days are good and most days are okay, I mean, I cut all of this stuff in half because I can't, take, if I took the dose that the bottle said, I mean, I couldn't even function. I would not even be able to go to work or do anything. There'd be no way if I took the actual dose. I don't take the actual dose. I take as minimum as I can just to get the back pain, at bay.
Sure.
At that. But I have noticed sometimes in stressful situations, I've resulted to them, and I don't want to do that. And so I'm kind of wondering, and codeine is the one, that has been prescribed.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah, is the codeine. But I fear that if I go to her and talk to her about that, she's just going to, take it away, and then the back pain will become so intense. I don't know. I'm scared to do that because I'm kind of scared that she's going to do that. Then I'm going to have the pain and nothing to help me. And I don't know. I feel like I'm between a rock and a hard place. If I go and talk to her about it, she may. And then what do I do?
Right. Then you're in.
I can't function. I can't function. Yeah.
I don't know. You alone know your healthcare provider, but Debbie, I think most would not just, you know, yank something like that and say you got to just suffer with this. But I think Sue is on the right path here, and it shows again, you know, that this can happen so innocently. I knew a gentleman who played rec league softball, I think, and he got injured sliding into second base or something, and just started taking a few things for the pain, and pretty soon it was out of control. So we have to realize that these are legitimate drugs in many cases that people are being given for real problems. And we have to understand that.
Right, but they're highly addictive. Sue, this just came to me as you were speaking and Jerry was talking. Is there a way you can talk to your doctor and just explain to him or her that you don't want to get long-term addicted to these painkillers? And can your doctor provide other treatment centers, that alternative, you know, pain management places, different things that you can do that could help you maybe just kind of naturally get through some of the pain? You may want to position it that way, Sue, so that maybe your doctor will say, oh, you know, that makes a lot of sense. You don't want to get addicted to it. You don't want to be long term. Here's some places you can check out. How about that, Sue? Have you thought of that?
Did in the very beginning, we did the needle injections in the areas of the back, and I did physical therapy, and I've been through all that, and it's just the rest of your life. They just said it's just chronic pain, and you're going to have it the rest of your life. But it's like, you know, when I open up the prescription bottle, you know, I count the hours from the last time I took it, and I'm in it because I'm scared. I'm kind of like going, okay, wait, you know, I don't. You know, I stand there at the counter going, this is not good. You know, this is not good. Because you're fuzzy. You're like, you're fuzzy all the time. You know, you're walking around and you're kind of like, you know, and then you're thinking, but if you don't do that, you can't walk, you know.
Well, Sue, you probably know if you listen to the show for any length of time, the Take-Two family is always willing to help one another. And Debbie, our friend Jane, emailed today at take2@ewtn.com and suggested even that you talk to your pharmacist about this, because they can often kind of be an extension of your healthcare provider, and they certainly know the effects of these drugs, how they're going to help you, how they may harm you in some way. So, Sue, that's probably the best we can do for that right now. But those are some good ideas.
We'll be praying, too.
Yeah, we'll be praying, absolutely. So thanks for calling, Sue. We appreciate that.
Thank you, Sue. And you know, Jerry, here's the other thing too. With Sue's call, when we express that there's a potential problem, or we think we might be facing a problem, that's, you know, we're 50% there. You know, when you start to talk about it, you can start to get to a real good solution. So this is why this conversation is, I think it's well done.
Okay, next up is Helen in Fort Worth, Texas, listening to Take Two with Jerry and Debbie on Guadalupe Radio. Hi, Helen, a first-time caller. We're so glad to have you with us. Welcome.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Just fine, Helen, sure.
Perfect. I was calling in because, you know, this is, I think I've listened to the first two episodes you guys had, and it was really informative. And I guess my family has a history of addiction issues to begin with, and a part of that comes from mental illness issues. And so self-medication from opioids was always the go-to for a lot of the members of my family, and it's riddled throughout history. My brother passed away in September from heroin overdose with a long battle for many decades of addiction. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't...
anyway. It's okay. We're so sorry, Helen.
Yeah.
I guess my point is that what we found, and what my sister and my daughter, which I'm so proud of them, they went to the doctors after that and said, hey, you know, and they don't have addictions right now, but they told their doctors, no, I just want to let you know that my whole family has addiction issues, and please don't prescribe us anything that could cause this problem to happen. So, you know, and that was, they were independent of each other in doing this. I thought that was really interesting, you know, as a result of this, they were brave enough to go in and say that. Mm-hmm. That being said, I know with my brother, I watched for years as he went spiraling downhill from opioids to heroin to anything that would help him. be a normal person because he was borderline schizophrenic, severely bipolar. So he had a lot of mental issues anyway. But my point being, he was a veteran as well. And when he got out of the military, he was homeless for some time. And then he went through the VA system, which, you know, I applaud them. They really tried to help him with his mental issues. But the one thing that they did do is they put him on a methadone treatment, which lasted. I mean, it went on for years, and it's a very rigid program. You have to go in and take the medicine every morning. And, of course, if you're homeless with the bar, you can't just go do that every day without jumping through hoops to get to the VA. But another thing that, and he finally tried to get off the medicine. It's in his late 40s. He finally was able to get off, you know, slowly off that methadone. And I'm telling you, it is horrible to watch. But he did it. And he did it successfully. Now, the VA would not let him do that. They would not let him get out of the program. And this kind of really upset me because he kept telling them, I'm trying to get completely off of drugs. And I need to stop. You know, you need to help me figure out to take antidepressants or something different that's not addictive like this. And they would not help him do that. And so that was a big cascading moment, I think. And they wouldn't allow any veterans to remove. They would not allow them to get off that program in that way, if that makes sense.
Wow. Well, we are so, well, again, we're so sorry for your brother's loss. You know, you don't have to give us his first name. We keep a book for the living and the deceased. And so I put your whole family in the book, if that's okay, Helen. God knows your entire family, just because you guys have been through a lot. And I think, you know, as I hear you talking, it just bothers me terribly as a mother and as a grandmother, that these things can be so highly addictive, and yet there's limited maybe avenues to get a person off of this, or to get them, you know, not attached to it. It bothers me greatly that we have come to this in this kind of society, and we have all the technology, everything in the world at our fingertips, but yet we can't seem to conquer this. And it's all centered around, you know, people trying to relieve themselves of pain. And yet we don't provide, I think, enough resources around, you know, brain health issues and everything that we can do, yet we have this stigma. And so then people, you know, hide and basically take care of their own pain by themselves. And here we have these epidemics. Jerry, how do you feel about it? I mean, it's gotta be frustrating for you too.
Well, yeah, a lot of, you know, agencies and resources and so forth, they do so much good. And yet I share your, Helen's frustration and yours too, Debbie. We don't know all the circumstances around that, of course. But Helen, I just really, we thank you for the call, and we heard your emotion. And this still has to be very, very fresh because you said it was September, and we presume it was just this last September. And so we're going to pray for your brother and for you and your family, as Debbie said. Mm-hmm. We are coming up where we got to take a quick pause here. But also, Helen, I would just bring to your attention that saint that I referred to at the early part of the program, St. Mark Zhi Tianjiang. He was Chinese, and he was heavily addicted in the last 30 years of his life. He just abstained from the Eucharist because he didn't think he was worthy. His priest didn't think he had a firm purpose of amendment, so they didn't understand it as an addiction back then, but he's a saint now. So let's all pray to him. Helen, try doing that and see if that gives you some additional comfort and consolation, and we can all do that for those that we love. Helen, God bless you. Our prayers go with you today. This is Take Two with Jerry and Debbie. 833-288-3986 if you'd like to join us.
We're talking about the opioid epidemic here on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie, and you are sharing your experience of this crisis, so we want to talk more about it, and so let's move back to the phones to Chris in Madison, Ohio, listening on the Station of the Cross. Hi, Chris. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. I'm very honored to talk to you.
Oh, well, we're
Thanks
honored to talk to you, Chris.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you. Well, my name's Chris, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. How are you?
Doing pretty
Amen.
Well. Hi, Chris.
That's awesome.
Yeah, congratulations.
I have and I do presently sponsor many men who are opioid addicted. And I've had a lot of success, and I have, of course, had some failures, too. But it is my belief that when a person must meet me, they have to be approached with a mixture of love and accountability. The love is, I'll be there for you whenever you need me, whatever you need. 10 o'clock at night, 3 o'clock in the morning, it doesn't matter. But it is you who are accountable. It's not your mother. It's not your doctor. It's not your therapist. It's not your gas station attendant. It is you who are accountable for your behavior. And I've had a lot of success at it, really.
Well, Chris, I can hear in your voice you're the type of person who would be both. Very, very loving, like you said, 10 p.m., 3 a.m., doesn't matter, get a hold of me. But that you're also, you know, really, forthright with the men and women that you sponsor about, you know, being responsible. And Debbie, you talked earlier about oftentimes this can cause someone who has a problem with, say, alcohol or drugs to pull away from other people, to isolate, to really want to avoid accountability in some cases, because I think it's a fear. It's not that they're bad people, but I think there's a fear sometimes that, you know, if I'm accountable, then this is going to mean I have to change and I can't have my substance or whatever. So it can create a real, and you said you've had some successes and some, I don't know if you use the word failures, but I think, Chris, they're all successes in the sense that you reached out to them and you've helped so many people, and even the ones that maybe you would consider not successes, those are people you've planted seeds in, and I'm sure other people have been there for them along the way as well, and I know you're praying, you probably pray every day that they will, you know, come all the way, like where you've come. Debbie, it's Chris's story is beautiful, and it's so wonderful to see him really helping other people travel the same road that he has.
Yeah, well, Chris, you've walked the walk, and so you can talk the talk, and so you are impacting people, and you're committed to other souls being free of this. May I ask this question, though? What do you do when you encounter somebody that, you know, it starts off with an accident or an injury, and it's chronic pain for the rest of their life, like Sue, our first caller, was talking about? I mean, I know I have neighbors right down the street that they were in a major car accident, and I know they're on heavy painkillers just to get through the day. How do you get somebody through that? How do you give them the alternatives so they can cope, so they can be productive?
Yes, ma'am, I understand your question completely. And my answer to them would be, don't worry about where this whole quitting, abstaining, sobriety thing takes you. Because no matter where it takes you, it's going to be better than it will be if you continue upon your present course of action.
Okay. Yes.
No one was ever promised a rose garden. As a Catholic, I must suffer. And I'm not saying suffering is nice, but what I am saying is it's better than the alternative. If you continued upon your present course of action, you're going to die, and you're going to die a painful death very soon.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry for that, but I'm here to help you. And that's all I can do is to help you. And I have, not to sound arrogant, but I've had a 100% success ratio because I have never gotten high with any of my sponsees. Not one of them have I gotten drunk or high with, you know. So I'm sober today. So that's a 100% success ratio. And I hate the fact that some doctor would prescribe something for some person to take for pain when there is another way out. I can't stand it. But the fact of the matter is, there is an, I don't want to insult anybody's intelligence, but I'm assuming you both know yesterday was the veneration day of Matt Talbot,
mm-hmm.
who was a scandalous, who was a scandalous alcoholic in Ireland, you know, who went to a priest and asked what he had to do. And the priest told him, and he was working a program 50 years before there even was a program. You know, he got close to God and lived a life of prayer and penance. And he never, ever, ever picked up again.
Yeah.
Never.
Wow.
His story is beautiful.
You know,
yeah,
I'm sorry. I'm sorry for all those people who are addicted today. But there is a way out. There is. There is a way out. And the way out is only getting close to Jesus Christ 24/7, always, end of story. And that's the way out.
Well,
and if they don't want to do it, well, they just don't want to do it.
Well, there has to be that willingness for sure, Chris. And thank you for the wisdom that you shared here. And you're right. I've heard the saying before. How does it go, Debbie? If you keep doing what you're doing, you'll keep getting what you get.
Mm-hmm.
And if you change nothing, nothing will change.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, change has to come. And you're right, Chris. There is a much brighter future for those who have difficulties like this. It's just really kind of maybe getting over that hump or that fear or whatever. But you're the perfect instrument that God is using to help people do that.
Mm-hmm.
So we thank you. And Debbie, we just got an email from our good friend Zach, who listens to the program
mm-hmm.
regularly.
Yes.
And he just wanted us to pass along Narcotics Anonymous is a fellowship to help people recover from drug addiction. And he gave their website, which is www.na.org. And they have a program for families called Naranon as well,
mm-hmm.
na.org.
And you know you can get a lot of resources there. So if you're, you know, probably checking out to see if you're addicted, maybe they can help you and guide you in that path. Chris, thank you so much. Keep up the passion. Great work. Great ministry work. It's a vocation now that you're into, Chris. So thank you so much for helping other souls become free of this addiction. So, wow. This is a heavy show, Jerry. I have to tell you.
It is. It is. But it's... Our goal, as you always say, Debbie, is to come out the other end better and, mm-hmm. you know, more enlightened and more inspired. So I think hopefully we are achieving that. So let's keep going. Joni is next, listening on Simple Radio app. Another first-time caller. Joni, thank you for joining Take Two.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a little nervous.
Well, so, no need to be, though.
My son, he's 26, and it started with a hernia surgery with pain meds, and he has a heroin addiction now. He's overdosed twice. Thank God thank God for Narcan, because that's both times he had to be Narcan. So the one time, the second time, he was in Philadelphia, and there's such problem there that they don't even take them to the hospital. They just Narcan him, and, you know, I get an alert on my phone if anybody, me or either one of my kids dials, if any of us dial 911, we get an alert. So it turned out there it was actually a homeless person saw him overdosed and grabbed his phone and dialed 911. So we didn't know where he was for 2 hours. Thank God he's now in, he's been in rehab. This is the fifth time, but thankfully his therapist got him a scholarship to go to this place, and he's been there a year now. So he thinks they need longer term treatment. But it's been, you know, been an ordeal. It's really been hard. And he's had a lot of friends who've died. And so what I'm worried about now is his dad just passed away. We've been divorced, but, you know, his dad passed away on May 13th. And so I'm worried about him, you know, relapsing. He just on the 15th, June 15th, a few days ago, was his 1 year anniversary, or the 16th. So the problem there was that fell on Father's Day, and his dad just passed away. But so, you know, we need prayers. We have other issues too, like his older brother for a while. You know, there's so much focus on the one family member that, you know, there's some sort of kind of hard to explain, but for a while, the older one was just like, look, I don't want to hear about Jeremy anymore. You know, it just causes a lot of problems. And so that's where that is. And the other thing I wanted to say too is the caller who called, the first caller maybe, who called him about her taking her own. Okay, so this is something else that happened with me during this whole time. I had a prescription for migraines. Now, it wasn't a lot, but during when my son overdosed, which this was all within the last, it was twice within the last year and, well, the last 14 months. And so I had this prescription, and so the one day I had a headache, or my, you know, I took one for the headache, and I was like, oh, wow, I'm not crying this afternoon, because I was just crying every day for a while, worried about my son. And thankfully, I have my own business, so I can kind of control when I have to see clients, and that was good, because if I was crying, I could kind of, you know, not plan my appointments on a different day. But anyway, long story short, I started just for, it, this was a short period of time. So I guess, you know, some people would consider this minor, but I just found myself like, oh, I can take that and I'll stop crying and I'll be able to get some work done. And I could. And I was like, well, I have to work. I have to pay for all of this stuff.
Right. Well, Joni, that's pardon me for jumping in, Joni. We got jam-packed phone lines here, so I just wanted to comment a little bit on what you said. And your own situation, you're kind of painting the picture that we've kind of laid out at the start of the show, that sometimes it's very, very innocent, and somebody will take a pain medication. All of a sudden, it's like, wow, you know, the pain is gone, thank God. Or, you know, I just don't feel that, or I'm not crying right now or something. So we hope that, you know, that has not become an issue for you. But regard to your son, I think you said his name, Jeremy. We will certainly add him to our prayer book, and you and your entire family. And he sounds like a fighter, Joni. You said it's his fifth time in rehab. A lot of people would say, you know, he's a failure. He failed four times. He's trying a fifth time. No, he is a fighter, and he is succeeding in this battle because he is making the effort. And you said he just had a sobriety date, I believe you said, of a year. And it's so unfortunate that his dad passed away around this time. But maybe that can catapult him in the right direction somehow, some way. We'll certainly say a prayer for that. What do you think, Deb? I mean, this is he really sounds like a strong man to me and a fighter. You have to be strong to keep fighting this.
Right. And absolutely. And Joni, I put your whole entire family in our prayer book, so please know that. Please make sure you pray to your, or ask your guardian angel to talk to your son's guardian angel, especially through this whole process. And, you know, I always say enlist the heavenly realm, you know, ask the saints to watch over your son. They will, you know, but they'll listen to you because you are his mom. And it's a beautiful thing, and it's coming out of love. So please do that. The other thing I just want to say real quickly, Jerry, and Joni, real quickly, your son had hernia surgery and he was sent home with, some pain relievers. You know, let's all face that, folks. When we go in for any type of procedure, okay, or we have, you know, some injury, we get some pain relief, but it should be temporary and short term, okay? So it's not always going to turn into this chronic addiction. It's not always going to be something that could be possibly deadly. And I think that's a key, Jerry. And I wanted to say that because I was thinking back in my own life when I had surgery. I was sent home with painkillers. And I'll tell you, it's, if you do have an addictive personality, a nature, it can become something you rely on. A lot of people can't wait to get off of it because they don't like the feeling, that you're on. So I just wanted to share that because, you know, I know there's, I know we got other people calling in, nurses and medical professionals saying that, at, you know, you may need this short term, you know, to get over the initial, you know, post surgery. What do you think about that, Jerry?
Well, yeah, I agree. I would hope that it would be looked at in that vein by both patient and doctor, certainly, absolutely. So, mm-hmm. Joni, thank you so much for the call.
Thank
we really
Joni.
Do have a lot of callers here. We appreciate the patience of all of you. A topic like this today on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie sometimes requires a little bit of extra time with each of you. So, and this is, again, this is the reason we're going to be doing the after show, and that will be back here in very, very shortly here in the near future. So in the meantime, we're going to go to Stand Tall Carol in Burlington, Wisconsin, who's been with us before and is a certified drug and alcohol counselor, if I got that title right. Did I get that title right, Stand Tall Carol?
Yes, right, Jerry. Hi, Debbie and Jerry.
Hi.
Very necessary. Hi. Very necessary show. And what weighs on my heart about the opioid crisis is so many of these kids go to a party and think that, oh, I'm going to, you know, one case where a young man says, I'm going to try Oxycontin tonight, oh boy, and then they have one episode, one experience with the drug that they think is just going to be an evening out, and they die. And that's, and I've heard that over and over again, and the parents are beside themselves because they, you know, it just happens so seamlessly. It seems that they just go and then they're gone. And so everybody should amp up the education and not just think that it's, you know, like when people say, oh, one won't hurt you or you can have one, is really be aware and also do what you can with the circle around you of children and other young people to educate them and not just hold back, because once you get addicted, you have to go to any length to cure the addiction. But you should go to any length before the addiction gets set in to try to help have people be informed. And as Catholics, you know, there's that thing about suffering, which the gentleman said before, who was sponsoring a lot of people. But one thing that people are saying in my, training and information is that people want the pain to be relieved, like 100% to be painless. But when you go to the dentist or have surgery, you work with the pain. You just don't, you know, you take medicine to get through the pain. You just don't have it like a light switch taken off. So it's such a crisis. And then
right,
it affects
Carol?
So many people around the person. So
right. Carol, can I ask you a question? Because I'm sure you were listening to the previous calls that came in and on the past two shows that we took on this topic. But, you know, what do you say to, I mean, you have surgery, okay, and your doctor sends you home with some pain relievers, which, you know, understandably so, if the pain is the tolerance, you know, you're up to 10 or whatever, and you're just in a lot of pain, you need, I guess, something to help. How do you know when it's too much, when it's gone over the edge, when it's become an addiction, when it's, I mean, you know, or is it really, should the doctor be, you know, one-on-one with you, really working with you and your personality? What do you say to that, Carol?
Well, the person is, for any addiction, the person is like a host for the substance coming to them. And a lot of times the doctor is going on experience where he says, this is what always works for me, but he doesn't factor in your body, your heredity, for your propensity for addiction with your family. So I think that it's going to be very crucial for people to get an outside pharmaceutical, not just a pharmacist maybe at a local store, but a pharmaceutical doctor, or, you know, get a second opinion and have two sets of eyes watching. You just don't count on the one, because, you know, and as we found out on the news, that some doctors were you know, sort of, they were helping promote the drug company's agenda too. So I think you have to really, really find out about what you're being prescribed and advocate for your own body and your own status. So, I myself went for a total hysterectomy, and I told him I was a recovering person, and the doctor just said that was your other body. Well, that was, I thought, a ludicrous statement. I asked for another doctor, you know.
Yeah.
So I think that don't just take anything like a blind sheep, you know what you're taking, and maybe you're not reading the warnings and it doesn't apply to you, but the doctor's so busy he doesn't see that.
Well, that's a very good point. Great point, Carol. Is sometimes we don't realize that we need to advocate for our own health care. Like you said, my body is mine, your body is yours. And in fact, I have done that with my healthcare providers. I have told them, you know, I really think that I need a prescription to this, or I really don't want to take this. And they might question me about that. And I'll say, you know what, I really think, you know, we're going in the right direction here. I need a little bit of help here. So I really have had those dialogues, Debbie, with my primary care provider. And it really, they may kind of look at you quizzically a little bit at first, but I think they have enough people probably doing that they realize that many of them might appreciate that, Debbie. Mm-hmm. I really think they do. So yeah. Thank you, Carol.
Thank you, Carol. Hugs to Jim. Thank you so much. Can we get to Lisa? Because Lisa's definitely going to get our Patients Award. Lisa in Columbus, Ohio, on St. Gabriel Radio, first-time caller. You got our first-time caller virtual award and Patients Award, Lisa. You're very special.
Welcome, Lisa.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you so much. I've been waiting for a show like this to come on. So I'm very privileged to be calling in, but I'm calling in as a mother who lost her son, 21 years old, Matthew, to an opiate overdose. And it'll be 3 years this coming July that he passed away. Totally unexpected. And I guess my message I want to give out is a couple things. Number one, it is about education. Like, I think if I would have known then what I have learned now and know today, I could have maybe helped my son better and recognized that he had a disease, a brain disease. And so many times parents and loved ones don't understand that part of it. And that's when, you know, you have parents who are frustrated and angry and ashamed and, you know, siblings who feel the same way. Like, why don't you stop this stupid, immature behavior? Which at the time, that's what it appeared to be. Like, you know, going out with your friends, then, you know, acting crazy and things like that. It was more than that. I think that's all how it started, but he kept it very secret. And so not knowing the warning signs, but, I guess the thing that I know meant the most to him, in his last weeks, because it was weird. It was as if he knew that his, sorry, that his days were numbered, but
that's okay.
Not giving up on your child. It doesn't matter how old or young they are. And the thing is that it's easy to shame them. It's easy to make them feel stupid, make them feel guilty because they're not doing the things you want them to do. And the stigma that lies behind addiction, it's just crazy. And what it does is it pulls them away where they isolate themselves and they won't ask for help, because they don't want anyone to think they have a problem. And I just want families that have someone right now that is suffering from addiction, it's a family addiction as well. It's not just an addiction on their loved one. It affects the whole family, and the whole family needs to take care of themselves.
Lisa, forgive me. For the sake of time, Lisa, I apologize. We've got about a minute until the closing music.
Yes.
And I know that Debbie shares my sympathies to you for losing your son, Matthew. We can hear, obviously, in your voice, the pain of that will never go away for you. Hopefully, you'll be able to be at peace with it at some point. But the point you're making about shame is so important. Debbie, we could do a week's worth of shows on this. Because, yeah, anytime we engage in any kind of self-destructive behavior, whether it's because of, you know, not our fault, we just find ourselves in that situation, or we started out in a certain situation and got to that. That's bad enough. We impose that upon ourselves. But what Lisa's talking about is we as a society, as a culture, we so often shun people who are in difficult circumstances, addicts, homeless, all this kind of stuff. We shun them and we shame them. And that, like Lisa said, that's pretty much locking them out of any potential help. Because like Lisa said, Debbie, they just simply say, you know what, I'm not going to approach anybody because they're just going to do the same thing. And, mm-hmm. you know, at least I'm not in any pain over here, you know, and if
that's
I go over
exactly
there.
Right.
Yeah. So, wow. It's right. That's such a deep and multi-layered onion to peel away.
Absolutely. Lisa, thank you so much for calling in. You're precious, and I'll always remember your son, Matthew, because that's my son's name. So, Lisa, our hearts go out to you, and the Take-Two family is already praying for your family. Jean and Christy, sorry we couldn't get to you. You can always text us or email us, take2@ewtn.com. We'd love to hear your comments about this. Gigi just said, please give everybody Father Emmerich vote. He has been on EWTN several times. They can find his talks on YouTube. He's very helpful to people with drug and alcohol addictions, and he has his own website, too. It's like a 12-step Catholic program. Folks, good discussion. Thank you so much for being with us. Until tomorrow, have a beautiful and blessed day.